nicest gal in town. Leather is tough.
All right, I'd like to call this meeting to order for the Goleta Planning Commission for today, March 11th. If you'd all join me in doing the Pledge of Allegiance, stand and join us, if you would.
Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. All right, let's go to tonight's agenda. And Madam Clerk, if you would do our roll call for us.
Thank you. Commissioner Daniels. Commissioner Fuller.
Present.
Commissioner Maynard.
Present.
Vice Chair Jenkins.
Here.
Chair Onan.
Here.
Thank you.
All right, so our next item is a public forum. And that's an opportunity for the public to speak on any item in the jurisdiction of the city of Goleta that's not on tonight's agenda. I do not believe I have a speaker slip that. Seeing no one rising, coming to the microphone, we will open and close the public forum. And we will go into amendments or adjustments to tonight's agenda. Anything on that?
No, there are not.
Okay. Do we need to make any announcement for the folks here that they know the conditions of the facilities? Or do you feel everyone knows that?
I believe I got to everybody.
Okay. And Wendy's in the back. You'll make sure people know where to go? Okay. You're not. Okay. So let's go on into our administrative agenda. Item A, Madam Clerk, if you would read item A for us.
Item A1 is the Planning Commission minutes for the Planning Commission meeting of March 14th, 2016.
Okay, so the minutes from the last meeting, I think we got those in our packets. Any comments or discussion on that or motions?
Motion to approve.
Second.
We have a first and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Unanimous. All right, right into our public workshop. So who's leading us off on this one, Ann or Martha?
I'll lead us off. First, good evening, and welcome to the seventh workshop of the draft zoning ordinance. As you know, this has been a couple-year process, and we're winding down the page turn, and tonight in your packet is the completion of the draft zoning ordinance. So congratulations. The end of the page turn is in sight, and then we will quickly release a revised draft per our discussions over the last, since the beginning of the year. So tonight we're talking about Part 5, Administration and Permits, and Part 6, General Terms. And as we did the last time, we'll break up the presentation and first give you a presentation on Part 5, Administration and Permits. When we conclude that conversation, then we'll do another presentation for general terms, if that works for you. The monitors are not working right now, so we will be using the handouts. Everything that we're saying in the presentation is there's no information that's in the slides that's not. Oh, we got one working. Okay. Look at that. I just wanted to say there's copies of the presentation out in the foyer for anyone that's here. We have plenty of hard copies. And so from a procedural standpoint, we will be covering tonight. If we don't get through everything tonight, then we have a special meeting on April 25th. So we'll continue the discussion, but hopefully we can get through everything tonight. And so I won't take up any more of our time, except for just to remind the public that information about these meetings can be found on goletazoning.com. And I think that's it. I'm going to turn it over to our consultant, Martha Miller, and she will start the presentation on administration and permits.
Great. Thank you. So I'll start with Part 5, Administration and Permits, with a summary of that, and then your commission can have discussion before then. If we get to Part 6, I'll introduce that. So again, as we get into it and as we've been spending a lot of time with the ordinance, just to remind everyone why the city embarked on this effort, and it was really to develop the first zoning ordinance developed specifically for the city of Goleta to implement the general plan and to be easy to use and understand and really reflective of the city and the city's development goals. As Anne discussed, we've gone through parts 1 through 4, and we're starting part 5, which is administration and permits. And that starts with the first chapter that really gives the planning authorities and really lays out the duties, the authorities, the powers of the city officials and bodies that are charged with implementation of the zoning ordinance. And it explains the roles of the City Council, Planning Commission, Design Review Board, the director and zoning administrator, and what their roles and authorities are. The next chapter is really the set of common procedures. So the different types of permits and the different actions that the city has for review of land use decisions have a lot of kind of common, there's some commonalities to how they get processed. So in order to avoid redundancy and to kind of streamline the process, these are grouped into one chapter. So it has sections on application submittal, preliminary review, application review, environmental review, public notification. So these are all the processes that any permit that requires permit notification, that's all in one place. So it's the procedures that are common to multiple types of permits. This next chapter, now we start getting into the different kind of levels of review and the processes for that. The very basic level of review is the zoning clearance. And every permit that comes through or every business license or any application for use or construction goes through a zoning clearance. And that's where the planning staff looks at if it's an application that's by right, that it still conforms to everything within the zoning ordinance. Or if it had a conditional use permit, that what's coming through for that building permit or that use, business license or use, it conforms with that approval. So it's really the check that the planners do for everything that comes through to make sure that it conforms with the zoning ordinance or previous approvals. The next chapter is on use permits, and you have three types of use permits: the administrative use permit, conditional use permits, and temporary use permits. So if we think back to the land use tables where things were in AU in the table, that's an administrative use permit. And that requires public notice and hearing, and it's before the zoning administrator. The zoning administrator does have the option of elevating that decision to the Planning Commission for any administrative use permit. Maybe is controversial, has a lot of interest, or the zoning administrator feels that it's a level that the Planning Commission should really consider. So that's available. Conditional use permits, these are uses that there's the CU in the land use regulation tables, and those have public notice and hearing before the Planning Commission. And then temporary use permits, that's required for those temporary uses, which we discussed as part of part 4, the section on temporary uses, and that's a zoning administrator review and decision. And all of those, and actually if I go back a little bit to the common procedures, which has the appeal section, so any decision by the zoning administrator and any decision by the Planning Commission as well is appealable through the process, and that was in common procedures. The next section on design review lays out where what is subject to design review, who the review authority is, whether it's the design review board or if there's administrative design review, which is conducted by the zoning administrator. So it gives the levels of design review and the responsible parties, as well as the scope of the review, what design review is considering as part of a project, the criteria that they're looking at for the review. Variances, these are a particular type of process that's really for relief of standards where the strict application of the standards would really, you're making a finding that it's depriving the property owner of equitable use of their property. So similar properties are okay and really get certain privileges, but by some nature of my property, I'm precluded from that. So I need a variance from standard so that I can be treated equitable. And the kind of the common example used is if somebody has a big boulder in the middle of their property and you need to have a variance to the setback so they can build something on that property. They could build a, say, a house, but because of some characteristic of that property, they need to modify the development standard. So that's the variance process. And then it has the procedures and then the findings that are required to approve a variance. The next chapter is on coastal development permits, and this is really implementing the coastal acts for the processing of coastal development permit. The idea is that at some point, Goleta will have a certified local coastal program and have permit jurisdiction over it. So this lays out the procedures for processing a coastal development permit. A lot of this is set by state statute, so it's incorporating procedurally these into the zoning ordinance. The section on modifications and reasonable accommodation, it's to allow some limited relief to standards where it's consistent with kind of the purposes of the ordinance. They're not so much where you can make these findings for the variance that there's some particular hardship, but there's some other reasons why the zoning administrator might grant some dimensional waivers to dimensional standards. Particularly in the situation that Goleta's in where you're where there's been some gray areas before in interpretation, and now you're picking a hard standard or clarifying the standards. This will help in those times where you need some flexibility in that being able to accommodate some flexibility where, you know, now that things are clear and spelled out, something may have been built differently, but it may be okay to consider that. This gives some flexibility for interpretation and administration. So it details, you know, how much relief can be granted. It's generally about 10%. And then it has certain findings that are required and conditions that can be applied. There's also the process for reasonable accommodation for people with disabilities. So that's a federal law, actually, to accommodate for that. Next section's on emergency permits, where this sets the procedures for issuing permits where there's some circumstances that don't allow time for the regular permit processing. And this is very similar to what's in place today for the emergency permit procedures. Development agreements, which are the local provisions really to implement provisions in the government code, which allows government entities in order to enter into these agreements with private properties. And so it lays out the local provisions for implementing that section of the government code. Then there's a couple of chapters on that deal with amendments to adopted plans, including specific plans. This is the process for general plan amendments, zoning text amendments, specific plan amendments that really give that process from initiation to public notice and hearing. As you know, as you will do with this, the Planning Commission makes a recommendation to the City Council, and then the City Council is the ultimate decision-making authority for that. For specific plan, there's also a reference to the government code because that has a lot of very specific things that kind of dictate specific the processing and the contents of specific plans. And then finally is a chapter on enforcement, detailing the responsibilities for enforcement provisions under this title, and then has provisions for penalties, remedies, how to remedy a situation if there is a violation, and the option for recording a notice and order, which, and then there's basically a recordation of a violation on the property, and then that recordation is removed once that violation is taken care of. So that's a quick summary of the contents of Part 5, and I can answer any questions.
All right, thank you very much. Staff, do you, any of the commission have any questions for staff at this time? Go ahead, Commissioner Maynard.
I don't have a question for staff, but I do have a quick disclosure. Just that I attended the open house for the zoning ordinance last week, and it was exciting to be there, and I was able to talk to a number of community members about their thoughts on the zoning ordinance during that meeting. So.
Thank you. Anybody else have questions for staff? If not, let's go to public comment. And so those of you that have filled out a slip, or maybe if you haven't, you can make comments to both section 5 and 6, because I'm being optimistic thinking we're going to get to 6 tonight. And of course, if there's a necessity to come back to the public, we certainly will in between those sections. But I have two speakers, Ginger Anderson and followed by Cecilia Brown. Looks like we get a couple more, or one more. Thank you. Yeah, right there on the straight ahead. Right.
There we go.
Yes. Okay.
Hi.
Congratulations.
I'm still Ginger Anderson, and I still work at Stantec, and continuing to help the city of, or sorry, the Goleta Valley Chamber look through the ordinance update. And we had another good meeting with staff last week, which was very cool. To hit the highlights on things we talked about at that meeting, one of the items was modifications. Modifications used to be allowed for up to 20%, and they're being proposed at 10%. We think 20% is more reasonable. And the second part of modifications was there's an item that an exclusion from a modification where you can't change the lot area width or depth. There should be some allowance for cases where there's a lot line adjustment between two parcels that may not already meet the lot area width or depth, and you might want to change a lot line and it still won't meet those things. So that's one instance where there should be flexibility for modifications on lot area width and depth. And one of the bigger items was adding in some clear direction on substantial conformity. That's a process that we rely heavily upon for projects that are approved if there are modifications that need to be happening either in construction or as final design occurs or with a new owner who wants to perhaps change a loading dock in the back. There's a number of lots in the city that are approved with the development plans, and the substantial conformity and the development plan amendment processes were important to us are important to practicing and applicants to allow minor things without having to go back to a commission or a larger hearing body. And then to follow that up in the definitions, there should be a definition of substantial conformance because that language does appear in the code still. Moving on to definitions, there's now percentage uses for primary and accessory uses of 70-30, and maybe that should just be left without a percentage to be flexible to allow an accessory use. The next was bicycle parking. Noticed kind of an issue with what's considered long-term bicycle parking of 4 hours, and also that we're doing quantifying them by full-time equivalent rather than full-time employee. Those are things we might want to, look into a little bit further because those full-time bicycle parkings do have to be, 50% of those have to be covered. So there just might be some land use constraints using those definitions. We're for bicycle parking, but some of the definitions may make it a little onerous. And then finally on expiration, since there's no longer a final follow-on procedure to a lot of the permits, there used to be a discretionary approval and then a follow-on permit. There was a lot of time built into that section of the process. And with the expirations being 2 years, perhaps they should be 3 years now because we don't get that, aren't afforded that amount of time. So right on time. All right, thanks.
Cecilia Brown, followed by Kim Scheisses.
Good evening, Cecilia Brown. Congratulations on your completion of your page turn. I'm thinking optimistically. Mm-hmm. I have a couple of items. My first is on public notification. Missing is a specific category for notifying for big projects like Westar, which I think should have greater noticing than just 300 feet from the property boundary. It should be like 1,000 feet. I think that's probably what you did in the Westar before, and I think that needs to be added into the zoning code. On modifications, I don't understand why in the old ordinance the ZA held at least one notice public hearing. Why has this notice hearing been eliminated from the proposed ordinance? I think it should be included. Also, I agree with Ginger about substantial conformity determination. I think that that's a useful procedure. It's got a lot of good robust guidelines. Normally planning commissioners don't get involved with it, but I did with a project with Christmas Tree Farm with actually her firm and developer, and I thought it was really, really good and very helpful to all parties concerned. What I'd like to see is the definitions to both for signs and lighting to be, some definitions were missing from the sign ordinance, and I realize that those are probably going to be sort of rewritten, the lighting ordinances, and the definitions in Carl's iteration of the sign ordinance were much more complete than what is in the current definition section. So those are my comments. Thank you.
I'm sorry, Kimberly Scheises, and that's our last speaker at this point.
Hi, my name is Kim Scheises, and I'm with Windmark, I'm with Camino Real, but I'm pretty much here just as a concerned citizen of Goleta. I probably shouldn't admit this, but I spent probably 2 years of my life in the early 80s writing Article 2, which then was adopted and then became the template for Article 3. And I'm embarrassed to admit that now looking at it, but back then it replaced a zoning ordinance that was only 40 pages and was adopted in 1961, so I thought we were doing something pretty good. But the point of that is that I love this stuff and I'm willing to help staff in any way I can. And the second point is that I can really, really appreciate the effort that everybody has gone to, particularly staff, in getting to this point. It is really difficult. But I have a couple concerns I just wanted to bring up today. I think that this section, even though there aren't a lot of people here and it's not that exciting, I think this chapter is one of the most important in the whole document. It is the verb of a sentence. It is the action for everything that's going to happen. And I think just a little more thought and work needs to go into it. One of the things that concerns me, I haven't gotten comfortable with, is the elimination of the land use permit. I can't quite get my head around how this is going to work. When we wrote Article 2, they used to do zoning clearance, and we created a land use permit to allow the public to be noticed, process, and just sort of that permit or that defining moment in a project where the planning department says, okay, go to building. So I don't know, I don't quite have a recommendation yet. I'm going to keep thinking about it, but that's one thing that concerns me. The other that's sort of been overlooked is there's so many of us in the city of Goleta that have development plans. We've eliminated the development plan. How do we modify our development plans? What happens if we want to make a change? What would have happened when Gersh Park wanted to add that other building in the baseball field, the bathroom building? How do they deal with that? So we haven't thought that through yet because we have no more development plans. We're going to this administrative or conditional use permit as the tool for discretionary review. Another thing that I'm not clear about is on the zoning clearance. You know, this is supposed to be this sort of easy thing, but yet when can it be elevated to the Planning Commission? It's all kind of not clear, and I think that's where in the future the permitting process becomes a problem for the public on both sides, and that's where the government gets criticized for not having clarity, a clear path. The last thing I'm just going to bring up today is required findings for the DRB. Some of them overlap with and pull them into the planning arena where I don't think they should be. You're requiring them to make findings on policy consistency with zoning. I think that's a little bit out of the arena for the DRB and puts staff in a difficult position later on if they have a different interpretation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So I do, did I have, no, that was my last speaker. Yes. All right. So we're going to get into the workshop portion of it, our page turn. And as always, I go to the commission and see if somebody came up with a better idea how to do this.
Do we want the staff to respond to
that? Well, we can certainly allow that. Okay.
I would particularly be interested in the staff's response to the last speaker. I thought they brought up some interesting questions I'd love to hear staff's perspective on.
We'll go to staff. Staff, do you have anything to add?
Sure. And I apologize, I was actually supposed to cover that in the presentation on the substantial conformity. So you do have some guidelines for substantial conformity, which after this came out and staff looking at it, it should be incorporated into the draft zoning ordinance. And it would really go into the common procedures. There's a section 1753.110, which is revision of approved plans. And so if there's approved plans and someone comes in with, they want an amendment or a change, they get into it, then what the zoning administrator does is looks at these criteria for whether the proposed changes can be called in substantial conformity. So it gives the criteria for that. If with the proposed changes, the zoning administrator cannot make that finding that it's in substantial conformity according to these guidelines, then it gets processed as a new permit, so as a new application. So that's really the process. So that's what happens if you wanted to make a change. If you had a development plan that was permitted and you came in and you wanted to make a change, you can see if the changes are in substantial conformance. If not, then there's a new application. And that's when you look at, well, what would the permit be required today? And that may be an administrative use permit or it may be the conditional use permit. There's not a one-to-one relationship necessarily of the development plan equals something else. You look at what are the requirements. As far as when a zoning clearance gets elevated, a zoning clearance is a ministerial permit. So it's not, there's no discretion in it. It's really the check. Are you in conformance with the ordinance? Are you in conformance with a previous approval? So there isn't that discretion in it. It's not something that gets elevated or has public notice. It's really just that check. And it's that check that, planning makes sure a business license comes through to make sure that that's an allowed use or they're meeting each one of the conditions in order to get that approved. So it's not a discretionary thing that really gets elevated. At the same time, if somebody disagrees with a determination that the zoning administrator made that was in conformance with the ordinance, that's what can get appealed. Let's see, some of the other things as far as a modification for the lot area or width. What this is saying in here is you just can't do that through a modification process. The process for that would be through the lot line adjustment, which the lot line adjustment has some findings if it's equal to or better than. So that's the process that you're going through for that. It's through the lot line adjustment. You can't, under the zoning ordinance, ask for a modification to lot width or area because there's another process for that. So there is a mechanism for that. It's just a separate mechanism. And as far as the definitions, and certainly signs, lighting, and any other section that gets changes, what is in the terms that are defined are terms that were used in the ordinance. So in the event that you know, by the changing of those sections, if there's additional terms that need to be defined, those would be included as well. I know in looking at in the signs definitions, where it looked like there were some definitions of signs not included in the definition sections, it's because sometimes that was included straight in the chapter on signs. So it would say, I'm not going to pick the right example, but for instance, identification sign, and then it would say signs for the identification of, it kind of gives a description. In some cases, if you just compare a version of the sign ordinance that was circulated versus what was in here and why some definitions weren't included, it's because sometimes that was just incorporated into the chapter itself. So that kind of covers my note. Did I cover everything that...
I would like to respond to some of Ms. Scheiss's comments, which we had a very good meeting, and she brought up a lot of really great technical questions that I think are enabling us to go back and really refine parts of the code, especially this particular section or chapter, actually part, it's not really a chapter, in regards to the design review. So as you know, we went through a process to sort of reorient the board back more towards design in early 2015. And so that was the first iteration of kind of taking the findings and sort of eliminating some duplication and putting it back more towards a design focus. But I didn't want to take it absolutely all the way because I did want input from the board. I'm actually meeting with them tomorrow to go over their section. Hopefully we will be looking at their findings and criteria and trying to firm that up a little bit more. And this will be the second step to really put it back to a design focus, given that they were established to serve the planning agency or council before the Planning Commission was actually brought into play. So that's sort of the interesting little, tidbit, I think, why it's taken. I didn't want to do the full swipe on the first step. So this is the second step where we get more input from the public on making sure there's more of a design focus and the findings and criteria are more focused in that fashion. The one thing that is new is the introduction of administrative design review. And so as part of this second step, we're bringing that forward to play a role in the overall process. But this process currently, with the exception of administrative design review, is in our municipal code as part of Chapter 2 or Title 2 in the function of all the boards and commissions. And that's where the process sits right now. That's all.
Mr. Chair, I'm wondering if someone could talk about the elimination of the land use permit and the development plan that was brought up.
The what?
Ms. Scheiss has mentioned that we've eliminated the land use permit and also development plans. And
so,
I'm just curious if we can elaborate on that a little
bit. Sure. That was one of the main, when we started this process, when we became a city, we adopted the county ordinance in full. And it is written for a county and not a city. And so a city typically of our size doesn't have such a long involved process of development plans and land use permits. Usually the resolution or decision made on an entitlement attached with the conditions serves as the land use permit. And so that's sort of what we were thinking of, simplifying the process and eliminating those functions. We've gotten a lot of complaints about the land use permit. While it does give some people a sense of security, it's an extra fee, it's extra time, and it's a lot of extra staff time. Mm-hmm. So part of the simplification of the process was to look at where is that made? What goes with that decision? And in a lot of cases, the land use permit is simply packaging of the conditions of approval with maybe some extra things that might have come up after the fact, which usually is attached to the building permit. And so why would we need to go through a whole separate process with time and extra money when the resolution of decision plus the conditions serves the same purpose?
So we're going to go to a zoning clearance, basically, similar to the city of Santa Barbara, and then onto a building permit.
No, I see it more as you have the rezo and the conditions, and it's the sign-off on the building permit with those attached to it, which is your final approval.
And then, Ms. Miller, were you suggesting that you're going to be adding language about the substantial conformity process in the next iteration?
Right, yes.
Thank you.
Did you get your question answered on development agreements?
It was development, the development plan.
Development plan.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Is there anything to add regarding that?
Well, the development plan would be the site plan. Mm-hmm. Well, what is the development plan now is the site plan that comes with the approval mm-hmm. that you're requesting. Mm-hmm. And so that gets stamped as approved and you move forward to the building permit. Mm-hmm. So I, with a city our size, the county model doesn't really work. Mm-hmm. It seems excessive. And when you're looking at streamlining and making things simpler, that's sort of the first thing to go. And I don't know if Ms. Miller wants to jump in, given her experience with a number of cities of all different sizes, but I've seen this process work really well for folks, and it's easily understandable. Mm-hmm. It's not what people are used to, because everyone's been working with DPs and LUPs for a long time. But I think in a lot of ways, it makes everything work a little, it flows a little bit better. Actually, it flows a lot better, and it makes the price come way down because the staff hours involved in every application get reduced substantially.
Go ahead, Commissioner Maynard.
So this might be a naive question, but so what about a project where you don't have a building? So let's say an agricultural project that might have done a land use project permit before, but not a building permit. Is there a case like that?
Well, you may have where, you know, there's no construction, but there is a change of use. And in that case, you would require to have a business license, and the business license gets sent to planning to check to make sure that that use is allowed. Or if, you know, there's a use permit required for it, that's when the planner would then say you need, but that's that zoning clearance check. So before you can use the property or do construction, you need that zoning clearance.
And in some cases you may have, like for an agricultural use, they may need a CUP. They may need an AUP. So it depends on what use is happening. For example, right now, the city's processing a permit for a master use permit for Fairview Gardens. And that is moving forward as it would essentially be a CUP if that came through this process now. And it still is in our old process. But because in our old process or existing process, you have development plans, land use permits. You still have the conditional use permits. You could have a variance. It's just a wide range of permits, which you want to sort of simplify it as much as you can in order to make it more accessible. And that's what we've tried to do here.
Okay. All right. Mr. Fuller.
Yeah, if I may. It seems it was a long time ago we were talking probably about lot line splits and adjustments, like maybe at the beginning of the process here. So I'm just wondering what provision do we have in here for, you know, the lot that might be 1 foot short on a width in a lot split? You might have 59 feet and 60 feet.
Well, that would be your subdivision ordinance. Anything with a split or division or lot line adjustment is your subdivision ordinance.
And can I ask, is that denied then if they're 1 foot short, or what provisions do we have for you know, do we have any provisions for allowing modification of those rules?
They would be through the subdivision ordinance. I can't speak exactly to them right now, but that is another ordinance on the list of things to update. Oh. So at some point.
Thank you.
I did want to say, I wasn't going to do this tonight, but this is something that has seemed to work well with groups that I've talked to about before with this particular ordinance. And I don't think I've talked with the commission about it. It came to me a few weeks ago that some of the difficulty that people are having with this document and how different it is very similar to the difference when the world went from WordPerfect to Word. So if you use WordPerfect, you knew that like the back of your hand. You knew every code that was involved. It made sense, even though it wasn't the most intuitive program. And when people switched to Word, it was devastating to a lot of people. You had to learn a whole new thing. It didn't seem to make sense, but as you used it, after a few months, now most people are experts in that, and they've gotten used to it, and it does make more sense logically and intuitively as they've moved forward. And that's sort of what we're dealing with here. I wish I had thought about this at the very beginning, and we could have sold it as that. But it really is sort of, when people are starting to look at this, they're and they know the old code so well, mm-hmm. that this proposed one is different. But in the long run, it will make more sense. You know, we're still refining things and getting the kinks out, so to say, and, you know, answering the real technical questions. But I think in the long run, it will be very similar to that realization of, oh, this is easier to use. And that's the goal. Mm-hmm. Thank you for indulging me. Mm-hmm.
Chair and Commission, if I might, staff has been spending a little bit of time taking some cases just like on the back of a napkin, kind of through the process. Like, for example, if there's an existing development plan and they want to come in with some changes or a specific plan, and they want to, and that particular request would be run through this zoning ordinance. And so we've tried to get a little sense for how it does work, or maybe it doesn't. And you know what we found is, so first you go and look, well, maybe the request, if it's like an existing specific plan or a DP, maybe it's allowed. Maybe it's allowed by right. Maybe it's allowed as a modification. So you check there. Like, oh, okay, and if it doesn't, then you go look at, okay, well, what if it doesn't, then maybe it's a new conditional use permit. How would that look? How would that request look? Would it just be for example, adding the office building on to an existing industrial facility, and then restriping and redoing your parking and your landscape, and then we kind of looked to see how that would work, and it was pretty straightforward as far as using it. You just use your tools that are in your regulations. You don't have to redo your existing specific plan. You don't have to update and reissue completely and convert from a development plan to a conditional use permit. You just attach a conditional use permit. We also did some, let's say a permit was issued and now we're going to operate without an LUP. So the LUP is sort of, that's symbolic of they've met all their conditions of approval and now they can start grading. What would it look like using an existing case if we didn't have that LUP? Essentially, it looks pretty much the same because they still have all the conditions still apply. All those conditions are through the permit process. That's either, you know, a lot of them go to Planning Commission. So those conditions are mitigation measures or they're attached or other agency permit requirements. And they all have timelines on them and responsible parties. And so the planner is still making sure that all of those requirements are getting met. And anyway, so I just wanted to let you know that we are actively working through this and we'll continue to do so to see if there's any kinks and work those kinks out before we release a revised draft.
All right, thank you. So now back to commission. And as I said, I'm going to start it off the same way we did last time. Did anyone figure out a better way to do this other than a page turn?
You're good.
Not just we just say good, we move on? It's no. Okay, so we're going to start on first page of part 5-1. And because we always start with you, Commissioner Maynard, we'll go to you. We'll take this page and then we'll go two pages at a time going forward.
Okay. No comments on V1.
Commissioner Fuller.
No comment.
Commissioner Jenkins.
None.
All right. So back to you, Commissioner Maynard, for 2 and 3.
I have a suggestion, not for a change, but just for a clarification. In the zoning administrator section on V3, it might be helpful to have a table here that consolidates some of the decisions that the zoning administrator makes, which are delineated in other parts of the plan, but having that all in one place may be helpful as a tool. But again, that's not a change. That's just a way to collect some of the information, since I know we've had a lot of public comment on that area. And then I guess I have a question about 1752.060.F4. About negative declarations and mitigated negative declarations. And I know we've seen a couple of those come to the Planning Commission, and I think it's been helpful for me to feel like I could comment on that and see if I agreed that it should be a negative declaration. So I think I'd like to see that come to the Planning Commission.
Right, Commissioner Fuller?
Right, 1752050D, investigate and make reports on violations of permit terms and conditions when the city has initiated revocation procedures. So you don't do any investigating until revocation procedures have been initiated? It just seems like, so you never do anything, and then all of a sudden somebody initiates a revocation procedure.
No.
And then you investigate.
No, code enforcement would handle the initial report and investigation. This is if it reaches the level of revocation, then the director needs to get involved and do an investigation and review of all the materials generated to date.
Okay, maybe that could just be clear. Okay. Yeah, thank you. Then down 1752060B, issue written rules and procedures for the administration of this title. I think it'd be kind of nice if maybe the Planning Commission reviewed them, whatever the rules and procedures are. I'd just like to, have a little oversight maybe higher than its staff.
Okay.
Thank you.
Commissioner Jenkins on two and three.
On page two for the Design Review Board, just hoping that in your discussion tomorrow, Ms. Carmen, that you'll cover this one as well, just as far as their responsibilities. Aside from that, I don't have anything on these two pages.
I'm sorry, would you repeat that comment?
That the Design Review Board, Ms. Carmen is going to be meeting with them tomorrow to go over goodies in here and just their definition, allow the Design Review Board to say, hey, is there a B? We've got A, B, is there a C and a D that we should be adding, or just let their input on that.
Mm-hmm. So that's weird because that's I'm on 1752040.
And you have a C.
And I'm putting a C.
Oh, good.
and that's, I guess, why I wanted to see if you already got my C. So it has recommendations on projects that are reviewed. And I just have a note on policies, a recommendation on policies. We don't call out that in their authority, but obviously we use it for policy review. So I don't know if we call that out in the design phase. I have no other comments on three. Moves us to 5-4. Commissioner Jenkins, why don't you take five?
Can I just take, was there a comment from Ms. Carmen on that one?
That's part of the recalibration of the board and the commission, is they don't usually review policy.
Right.
Or make recommendations on policy. We're trying to take them back to the architectural and design component of what they're supposed to be doing. Now, in particular cases, if you want them to review policy for something, we could ask them, but generally that's not in their purview. It has been for a really long time, and that's sort of what, because the Planning Commission reviews policy, it's trying to clarify those roles. But if that's something that you want, maybe what we would put in there is based on Planning Commission request, they could review policy and make recommendations to the commission. I'm just throwing out some suggested ideas. I'm getting looks from the other side of the dais.
When requested?
I wasn't necessarily thinking policies embedded wholly within the zoning ordinance, mm-hmm. but, design guidelines, mm-hmm. which in essence are a policy guideline. So if we don't have to call out that kind of specificity, then it doesn't give me any heartburn not to have it in there. But you're right. We have traditionally used them as a policy guiding body, if not determinant body.
Right. Now, within the reformed process, during conceptual review, they do have the ability to comment on whatever they would like, even outside the design function, to give recommendations to the commission on whatever it may be as citizens and members of the Design Review Board. And that's not going away. We still have that in here. I don't know if it needs to be called out in their duties in addition to what's entitled to. We certainly could. But maybe let us take the language back and we'll see what we can come up with.
Perhaps we could say something just as simple as on design and signage ordinances and policies, something that's specific and keeps it within design and architectural guidelines. But if there is a policy or an ordinance related to the design and architecture specifically, then I think I would support the idea of DRB being a body that should be written into the approval for that.
And I would just offer that this is identifying the duties and the powers. It doesn't express everybody who would look at it or see it. You know, you could always put something mm-hmm. to DRB. It does not need to be codified. Same with the rules and procedures for administration of the title. Of course, the zoning administrator would work with the appropriate bodies to make sure those are appropriate, but that's who is ultimately responsible for doing that task. So even if DRB isn't mentioned in here as far as reviewing mm-hmm. certain policies, it doesn't mean that the process in going through and making those policies wouldn't involve them. Just as DRB mm-hmm. is reviewing sections of the draft zoning ordinance, mm-hmm. that's nowhere, you know, codified that has to be the process. So just offering that.
Okay, so we're now on page 4 and 5. Commissioner Jenkins, anything on 4 and 5?
Just on 5, application forms. I spoke briefly, I think it was at the last meeting with Ms. Carmen, just about our application processes, and we have some very antiquated carbonless forms and massive amounts of writer's cramp filling them out. So I'm hoping that we'll be able to streamline this mm-hmm. in the future. I know, I hate to keep using the city of Santa Barbara as an example, but there's a master application form, done. You know, one form, done. You know, maybe a couple little support stuff you have to do, but to do a separate form for mechanical and grading and electrical and plumbing, and it's repetitive. So hoping to see that revised and streamlined.
Commissioner Maynard, we're on 4 and 5.
No comments on 4 and 5. But just to finish out the conversation from before, I would support codifying the DRB review in that process. And that's all I'll say on that. And I'm done with 4 and 5.
Commissioner Fuller, anything on 4 and 5?
Yeah, I think one thing on V4I. It talks about review and approval of signs that do not require action by the design review board. I think it would be helpful if the public knew where to find where those signs are, maybe a reference to, mm-hmm. you know, what section that is. Mm-hmm. I think as many cross-references as we can have in this document, the better for the public, so they don't, mm-hmm. you know, see something and then try to mm-hmm. find where that is and then know that talks about something else that they know must be somewhere else, so. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I do have a comment on the same one.
Oh.
Commissioner Fuller, and I was gonna use this as a way to throw my preference in, because I look at that and I think everything is subject to design review, except if it's in a sign plan, an overall sign plan, as mm-hmm. I understood the ordinance. Everything else goes to design review, okay. But you mentioned that we have administrative review.
That's part of this proposal. So okay. The design review section talks about administrative design review that goes into some signs, mm-hmm. and that is the duty that corresponds to that design review section. So mm-hmm. having that section note would help.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Because that's what I wanted to get to, is that we got to have some sign that can be administratively approved. So that not everything has to go through the DRB. All right, so we're on page 6 and 7. Commissioner Maynard, do you have anything on 6 and 7?
No comments on 6 and 7.
Commissioner Fuller?
On V7D, it talks about preliminary review conference that would take place within 30 business days of the preliminary review application. I noticed in here that we go back and forth between business days and calendar days. 30 business days is 6 weeks, and that seems like kind of a long period of time to wait for a design review. I think public would really appreciate having a shorter period.
Yeah, this isn't design review. This is the
preliminary review conference
for a large project with staff. And so you're right. We need to look at that.
Well, in a 45 days, you know, I mean, if it's 6 weeks, we'll say 45 days. And be consistent whether we're mm-hmm. using calendar days
right.
or business
and
days.
Calendar, we can definitely make that consistent.
Commissioner Jenkins, anything on 6 and 7?
No.
No, I have nothing either. So you go ahead, Commissioner Jenkins, 8 and 9.
No, I don't have anything.
On either page?
No.
Commissioner Fuller?
Yeah, and if I can just go back, it says that the staff will attempt to do this within that period of time. So that it's not even, you know, if I'm right here, there, you know, so there's already some leeway in that. But
should instead of shall.
I'll stop there. On 8, 1753060B, I've got a note.
Go ahead. We'll give you a moment to figure out your note.
So along with the notification of the general description of the proposed project, it might be helpful if the public also had maybe a list of the modifications, variances, or changes to the general plan or code that might have been requested. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, in the, you know, because you talk about a general description, that could just be a building of X square foot, you know, built at such and such a location, right? So maybe some of the things that people might, you know, be concerned about if they knew were actually going to be involved, especially modifications mm-hmm. or variances or requested things, mm-hmm. might be good to have in the general description. So a little more detail.
Okay.
That's it.
Commissioner Maynard?
I will start by supporting that comment because I think that was a wonderful suggestion by Commissioner Fuller to include some language about any modifications in the public notice. I will also note on V9, notification requirements, I know there was some public comment about this, and I would agree that the 300 feet within the coastal zone is sorry, 300 feet outside the coastal zone, 100 feet within the coastal zone, those are very small distances. So I'd like to see those increased, especially for larger projects. I believe 1,000 was suggested by one community member for larger projects, and I would support that. I'm also not quite sure why within the coastal zone the distance would be shorter than outside the coastal zone. It seems like we would have at least equal to or a larger distance inside the coastal zone. So I'd like to see those numbers increased. That's maybe only the neighbor. It's not getting very far there. That's all I've got.
Okay. I do have a couple comments. So on public notification, you know, that's always an interesting discussion that we get. People always have, you know, we weren't notified far enough in advance. I think we had that most mm-hmm. recently in the case of the telecommunications thing. Mm-hmm. And we specify within this when we don't call out when the application is deemed complete that we engage in the notification. And I don't know what we can do to clarify that, but there always seems to be friction mm-hmm. With the public about at what point they're getting notification. And anything we can do to sharpen that point. A couple of comments in section C about methods of communication. We don't mention the use of email or the city website as a communication tool. And whether
that's on page 10. Electronic notice. Mm-hmm.
Four.
Yeah, I see it. So these are mailed notifications versus. Okay. What I'm saying in this section one, mailed notification, first class mail for public hearings, Coastal Commission. Shouldn't we add email or website posting, or is that covered by four as included in that?
It's covered. So okay. Notice requirements, we require mailed, newspaper, posted. Electronic is optional, but we do that on a regular basis. And then the additional notice when there's drive-through facilities like we did in the case of the McDonald's okay. case. We use all of those. We even use okay. on a widely controversial item, we will have our PIO issue press release. We'll use Nextdoor. We will use any method of communication to get the notice out. The problem with mail notice even though those are required by state law, when a generic notice comes to you, most people don't read it. And what we found a lot of times is I didn't get it is the junk mail that people don't open. Now, a lot of people do, and so that's why we try this multi-pronged approach to get the word out so we get as many people to a hearing as we can.
Okay. All right, so we're on page 10 and 11. Commissioner Jenkins, what have you got there?
On the posted notice, the signs that go on properties, I wish there was a pen that could be used that won't fade.
We are looking at methods to do that. We, yeah. Our staff constantly have to go out every 2 to 3 days because the sun eats away at the ink.
Yeah.
We're not entirely sure what is happening there. And so we're looking at different options for signage, whether it's something with an insert and we use paper or we stick with the, we like the yellow. I think the yellow is common enough in this area or in other communities they use a different color. But everyone knows, even if you can't see it, go check the website because there's a yellow thing online or on the site. But we are looking at markers and different ways to make sure that that sticks.
I haven't found one that works yet. Yeah. So when you do, I really would like to know that. Also, I was going to say, as far as noticing neighbors, in some jurisdictions, at least for residential projects, as an architect, I'm required to knock on the door of the 10 closest neighbors and have my plans with me and say, hey, would you be interested in seeing what your neighbor is doing? And it can stir the pot, but it is a good neighbor policy to, you know, just to, you're facilitating the ability for the neighbor to know what the other neighbor is doing. So, and it's been helpful. So just a thought.
So do you have to just keep knocking on that door till they're home?
I try to go during business hours so they're not home, but no. No, you just, you one time, and then you leave an envelope. It's a form, but you leave an envelope stating, if you're interested in reviewing the plans, call me, and I'll make an appointment to show you.
So. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. All right, so that was your 10 and 11. Was that both of those?
10 and 11, that's all
okay.
I have.
Commissioner Fuller, 10 and 11?
Yeah, if I can go back to the noticing, I don't know if it would be helpful, but maybe we could have notices go out within 10 days of hearings being scheduled. And not less than 10 days before the scheduled hearing. Mm-hmm. So, there's like an encouragement to get the notices out as soon as possible. I don't know if it'd make any difference, but.
Mm-hmm. Well, right now, we do have the notices, we mail them out so they arrive 10 days prior to a hearing. Mm-hmm. That is our schedule. Now, our post office, on the other hand, sometimes has issues, but we do our best to make sure that they go. We always get them out on time, it's the delivery, and we try and get them out earlier where we can.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, yeah.
The thing is, when we have the notice ready to go out, all the documents need to be ready for public review.
Sure.
And so it's making sure. That's why, you know, doing it way early in the process doesn't really quite work. Because as soon as that notice hits, they need to be able to come in and look at the staff reports and plans and everything else prepped already for your consideration.
Right. Okay. So. Thank you.
So, Mr. Chair, I have maybe a valid point about that I was trying to get to is that when the public documents are deemed complete, so that we at least say that somewhere, because sometimes what I hear folks is they want to know when that application is submitted.
And we do have a number of citizens that regularly come to the counter and they want to know what's come in. And those folks, we provide them that information and sometimes they look at plans, but usually we don't have, notices don't go out until everything's prepped and ready to go.
Yeah, which I understand.
Yeah.
Commissioner Jenkins.
Yeah, just one other kind of a side note. On our online accessibility to the public, I've noticed that the city of Goleta will actually have floor plans and elevations posted online, which I'm just curious if that violates copyright, architectural copyright. I have a copyright. And so, you go to a plan archives and you want to look at a home, well, you can roll it out. You can't take photographs, and you can't trace it. And you can't even get a copy of those until you get permission of the architect and the owner. So anyhow, I'm just curious if the city of Goleta is going out on the limb a little bit from a copyright violation by posting these graphics online. So something to look into.
And I believe our city attorney's office has considered that because it is required to have all the public documents available for council, but I will check in with him and see what his opinion is on that.
Thank you. 10 and 11?
Yeah.
Are you going back?
No.
Oh, okay. No.
three on page V10, posted notice is required for all public hearings. Is that posed or posted?
Which one is it?
Three.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's
posted.
Posted, right, okay. Also, I was brought up in a letter about additional requirements for drive-through facilities. I don't really know why we would need additional, you know, noticing for those. You know, I'm in favor of removing that, but
state law.
State law. Okay, good. All right, well, I learned something. Thank you. Then under conduct of public hearings, in the presentation, C, after the director presents the project issues and required action, you're also going to be presenting the staff recommendations, are you not? So you might as well mention that, right? Staff recommendations, usually that's part of a presentation. Okay.
Okay, Commissioner Maynard? 10 and 11?
Yeah, several comments. I love the idea of knocking on the 10 closest doors neighbors, doors of the neighbors. Perhaps if we're getting a lot of public that are asking when applications are submitted, one of the things I love about the City of Goleta website is that you can sign up for all of these different types of mailing lists. If like there's a project you're interested in, you can get all the notices about that project via email. And I've used that a lot and really love it. Maybe we could have one of the listservs could be notice of new applications, and we could get little notices when those come in. I also liked the idea of having a notice when a project's completed, but maybe before a hearing is scheduled. So sometimes a project's completed, but for various scheduling reasons, we might not have a hearing for a while. No, okay, she's got that. All right. We mentioned that it was mentioned that press releases are often sent out when a project is deemed that it might be controversial or there might be a lot of public feedback about it. Perhaps we could delineate some of that and codify a little bit of it. So if it's a large development, if there's a change from agricultural land, then we'll always send out a press release. But if we could be a little bit more explicit about that, I know you do an amazing job, but maybe we have a different planning director who's not as attentive to those things in the future. So it might be good to codify some of that. I liked the guidelines that I sounds like our state law in five on page 10. About additional notice for the blind, aged, and disabled. And I just wondered, how would we do that? How do you reach those particular audiences? And do we have a good strategy for doing that?
You're required to send out to social service agencies mm-hmm. and other advocacy groups that mm-hmm. serve those communities.
Okay.
And then whether they turn that into Braille or something else, but we're required to work through that.
Okay.
Those agencies and groups to notify.
Okay.
It was actually that was something new that we learned mm-hmm. through the McDonald's application because okay. I think it's relatively new law. Our current okay. planning manager is nodding, so yeah.
And is that within the responsibility? You don't have to answer this right away, but maybe whose responsibility is to keep track of a list of who those service agencies are or. Just to enable you to be able to do that
it's
in the
staff.
Future.
Staff.
Okay. Yeah. That's all that I have on 10 and 11.
Okay, I have one comment that wasn't called out on page 11 D, the item about public hearing. The end of that one, it says that the presiding officer may require that individuals with shared concerns select mm-hmm. one or more spokespersons to present testimony on behalf of those individuals. I've never seen that where it's been required, mm-hmm. and I'm wondering if allowing that is trampling on some rights there. Mm. So I was just concerned with that line. So let's go to 12 and 13. And before we go there, so just so we're a little, as you see, we're actually engaging in more to back and forth tonight mm-hmm. to start off than we have in some of our traditional cases. So let's be let's use that judiciously, because we'll get into discussion. It'll be tomorrow before we get done with this. So I'm going to try to keep us moving along without all the discussion back and forth, unless it's necessary. So Commissioner Maynard, you're on page 12 and 13.
Page 13, 17, 53, 100C. There's an extra period at the end of the paragraph. This was discussed earlier, but we'll just tag it that 1753-110A, we should add that language about substantial conformity. And maybe we talked about, I think this is where revisions to existing development plans may come up, so maybe explicitly saying that. That's everything that I've got.
All right. Commissioner Fuller, anything on 12 and 13?
Yep. On V12, director's research near the top. I was just wondering if there was like a time period for that and if it would be available to the public. You know, like if within a certain time before the hearing or something, mm-hmm. you know, rather than just at the hearing, the director's research would be available. 1753090, conditions of approval provided by the applicant on record with a decision. What about public testimony or evidence that's submitted at hearings? Would that also be part of that? That's used as conditions of approval. So it wouldn't just be stuff provided by the city or the applicant, but you know, stuff that may have been provided by the public. Mm-hmm. That's it. Oh, yeah, that's it.
Okay. Commissioner Jenkins, 12 and 13?
Nothing.
And I have nothing. So Commissioner Jenkins, stay with you on 14, 15.
I was curious on 15, under the procedures. This is the procedures for appeal. I'm wondering if we should be adding an I below discussing fees. I'm assuming there needs to be a fee required for an appeal.
Okay. Anything else on 14, 15?
No.
Commissioner Fuller, 14, 15?
Yeah, I just think that 10 days is a little short for a time limit on an appeal. and under D, procedures, so that was C on V12. D, procedures 3H. In reading that, nowhere does it talk about raised, you know, it says right here, raised in the petition. So you're describing something that isn't otherwise specified in the whole section, and I don't know if it's defined in the back. So that's a new word. So a
petition?
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Maynard, anything on 14-15?
No comments on 14-15 or 16-17.
Wow.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I would just respectfully disagree about the 10-day appeal period. That's very common in the industry.
Okay.
And so I'm really comfortable with that one, but
okay, good. I appreciate you doing that. Okay. So we just went through 14, 15, and Commissioner Maynard went through 16, 17. So Commissioner Fuller, you get 16, 17.
Okay. I just want to point out at the bottom of V17-5, time limit for appeal to the Coastal Commission, it's 10 business days. Is that so? That's like 14 days or 15 calendar days. So, you know, we're going between business and calendar. It'd be best to be consistent.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Commissioner Jenkins, anything on 16-17?
It's been a while since I've read this one, but no.
Okay. So, you know, we'll always get another chance at this when it comes back. So you're on page 18 and 19, Commissioner Jenkins.
No, I'm good on both of those. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Fuller, 18-19.
Okay, so I got a little bit of a problem with this applicability and what it really means and for what uses. It doesn't exclude residential uses, so if you're going to have some change in tenancy, does that require a zoning clearance? If a business does, you know, change its ownership, is that a new use or is that the same use? If there's a new tenant that's doing the same type of business exactly as the previous use, is that, you know, a new use that requires a zoning clearance? If there's a similar use, then does that require a zoning clearance? Where is, you know, exactly what are we talking about with regards to this? And in doing the zoning clearances, you know, it requires that the uses all meet the regulations in the base zoning districts and overlay zones. So This is also probably where we're going to come into. A building was built for, say, lumber and hardware sales, and now somebody wants to do a nursery and garden sales, and the parking's not right. Or they want to do there's a medical office, and it wants to go into an office building, but it can't because the parking's not right. So the zoning clearance is going to be catching that, and you know we're really going to be restricting our built environment to very confined uses because of the parking regulations that we set up in this ordinance.
Okay. Commissioner Maynard, you're on 1819.
No comments on 1819.
Okay. My comment on 19 is B, Planning Commission review. The language there that about the zoning administrator may refer, I appreciate that language and how that will work through the process. So just calling out that I like it. We're on page 20 and 21. Commissioner Jenkins, you've got anything there?
No.
Commissioner Fuller?
Okay, I'm going to try and remember what it was I was talking about when I was writing this, but on V20 exceptions, no zoning clearance required for the continuation of previously approved or permitted uses and structures that are not subject to any building or zoning regulations. So what buildings aren't subject to any building or zoning regulations? Okay.
Okay, that was your question. Anything on 21?
That's it.
Okay. Commissioner Maynard, 20 and 21.
No comments on 20 or 21.
I have no comments on 20 or 21. Commissioner Maynard, why don't you take 22 and 23?
No comments on 22 or 23.
Commissioner Fuller?
No comment.
Commissioner Jenkins?
I'm good.
And I just made a note. We do call out, do we call out emergency permits under different authority? We do?
Yes.
Okay. It's been a while since that. So no comments there. Commissioner Jenkins, 24 and 25.
Nothing. This is the section that the DRB is going to review.
25 on.
Yes, mm-hmm. Section 25, yeah.
Commissioner 25. Fuller, anything on 24, 25?
No comment.
Commissioner Maynard, 24, 25?
Nope, just excited to hear the DRB comments on 25.
All right, so go ahead and go to 26 and 27, Commissioner Maynard.
26 and 27 on B3 on 26, second units and residential accessory structures should go to DRB, not just the zoning administrator. So that was one comment there. And then on page 27, 1756030A1, I think limiting, codifying that we're limiting conceptual review to only a single meeting is quite restrictive, and I think there are situations where DRB may want to continue that, and giving them flexibility to do so would be helpful. 1756030D on page 27, I'm okay with the idea of having multiple levels in a single meeting, but that may run the risk that they need to extend to a second meeting if the discussion goes long, and I want to make sure they have the flexibility to do that.
Okay. I missed your first comment on design review exemptions. Was that you said on?
My first comment was about B3 on page 26 about second units and residential accessory structures. And it looks like the zoning administrator would review those, and I thought DRB should review those rather than administrative design review.
Oh, okay. Commissioner Fuller?
Okay, yeah. Going back to V25, 1756-0201, it talks about all projects that are required to involve new construction or development, exterior alterations and installations. And then on the next page in 4 and 5, it talks again about exterior changes, and the combined piecemeal thing. It seems like all the 4 and the 5 actually is covered in exterior alteration and installations in all projects that require a building permit. So that seems redundant. I also agree about the second units should go to design review.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure about taking non-illuminated building signs out of the Old Town Heritage District from design review. Then on the V27 at the top, upper stories of a single unit home provide the addition is to the rear of the structure and does not significantly change the streetscape. Well, deciding whether it's changing the streetscape significantly or not, I think it should go to a design review if it's going to change the streetscape.
That was actually a point of discussion when the original changes to the code were done. They were actually okay with that, as was council. But we'll discuss it again tomorrow.
Okay. And I'm kind of with Commissioner Maynard on the two, meetings. I'm having a little more flexibility than one. An attempt to do it in one, maybe, but, still, you're trying to do a lot, I think. So that's it. Thank you.
Okay. So I'll take 26 and 27, and I'm going to disagree with both previous commissioners on B3. Second units and residential accessory structures should necessarily go to design review. I think there's a level of review where they should go there, but there's also opportunities where they wouldn't need to go to design review. So I wouldn't codify that one. On 27, so in item C, conformance review 2, one thing that I found a little troubling there was the second line, with assistance where appropriate from the design review board chair or chair's designee. So in that conformance review, that was a little hard for me to get my head wrapped around that one. And then on D, multiple levels of approval at a single meeting, I appreciated that policy. So I liked that as item D.
Just to note for that, the current code in Title II is just for signs in multiple levels of review. The board is asked to expand that, and so this is the point of that proposal, eliminating signs. It's everything can have conformance or conceptual and design review at the same meeting if the board chooses to do so.
Okay. Commissioner Jenkins, you're up.
Yeah. On the bottom of 26, C4, this is an exemption. The following development is exempt from design review. So additions of 750 or less square feet based on the exterior footprint measurement to a single unit home, or additions of less than 100 square feet to any existing upper story. I appreciate the spirit of that, and as a designer boy, it's a pass. I can add to a home without design review, but 750 square feet is a pretty decent sized addition. And if it's, it can affect the streetscape, it can encroach to a side yard. If it's 750 in the back, I suppose that could get a pass, but if it's affecting the front, I think I'd like design review for that. And then I think any addition to the second story should go for design review. Because you're talking window placement, you're talking good neighbor, looking down into yards. We're not managing public views, but we can encourage window placement, not to look directly into your adjacent neighbor and what have you. So I would like to see number 4 reworked. Moving on to page 27, this is talking about levels of design review and responsible party. Paragraph under A, conceptual review. 1 and 2, it almost suggests that it's gonna go to the Planning Commission, and certainly there's some situations where it doesn't go to the Planning Commission. It goes to the DRB and it doesn't proceed to the Planning Commission. So perhaps add language stating to the Planning Commission if necessary. I also think that conceptual review is limited to one meeting unless additional meetings are requested by the applicant. Well, you're giving the applicant a pass. If there's some onerous objections by the DRB, in my opinion, they should ask the applicant to return with a revision before it goes on to the Planning Commission. Otherwise, we're getting something that needs to be refined better. So I have a real problem with just the one, and I'll be curious to know what the DRB has to say about that as well. And I think I can't make sense out of my last note, so I'm just going to ignore it. That's all I have.
So go ahead to 28 and 29, as long as you're there. Commissioner Jenkins?
Thank you. Design review criteria on page 29, E, street frontages are attractive and interesting for pedestrians. It says, greater allowing for surveillance of the street inside buildings and elsewhere. So I'm just thinking in the situation of an adult business, you know, I think where appropriate is where we want this. You know, we don't necessarily want a transparent surveillance of what's happening inside the building in those situations. So maybe add language, you know, just a comma where appropriate. I don't know. That's all I have on this too.
All right, page 28 and 29, Commissioner Fuller.
On 28, I like the 1756040 scope of review. I just think that maybe we should include architectural details in that. I didn't see it anywhere, so. And then V29F, the proposed design is compatible with, I think we should say, or improves the historical or visual character of any area recognized by the city as having such character. I mean, you know, we can encourage greater and better design in the world, I hope, as an idea. I like the the project being designed for energy efficiency. And I'm thinking maybe we can include something about on-site renewable energy production being encouraged. Maybe that's not the right place for it, but I just thought that'd be a good thing to do.
All right. Commissioner Maynard, 28 and 29.
On page 29E, I'm curious where the motivation behind by allowing for surveillance of the street got added in. I know this has been a very controversial issue in other parts of the area. For example, in Isla Vista, I know there's been a lot of public comment about whether surveillance is a good or a bad thing. And I don't know if the public is aware that we're adding that here, unless maybe it was in the general plan someplace that I didn't see. So I'd want to know more about that and maybe get more public input on whether that's a goal of the community or not. I don't individually have a strong say about it, but would just like more information.
Just to add a note, this is really about, you know, eyes on the street and having safe and, you know, when people talk about front porches, and the nice thing about front porches is there's eyes on the street and makes for a safer environment. Mm. So it's that crime prevention through design kind of thing. And it's not surveillance into buildings. Right. It's the opposite. It's so that there's eyes on the street.
And it's also not electronic surveillance.
Right. Yeah.
Like cameras on the side of a building.
Right. Sorry, that's I wasn't getting that. No.
That's not what being called. It's I think you were getting kind of that idea, street surveillance.
Yeah.
Not
clear. That is where I was going. That I thought this seemed to imply more electronic surveillance. So, getting more clarity about that here would be helpful. On I, the project is designed to be energy efficient and goes into sustainability criteria there. Maybe some specific guidelines. This is a little bit vague, so having a little bit more concrete goals here may be helpful. And that's everything I've got.
And I have no comments on those pages, so let's go to page 30 and 31. Commissioner Maynard, why don't you take those?
I have no comments on 30 or 31.
Commissioner Fuller?
This is just one that's going to go with variances and modifications, and as I was reading it, it seemed that modifications were administrative approvals for, I'm getting ahead here. But
yeah, you are. You're not allowed that. Do that.
Okay.
No, go ahead.
Where, you know, was for modifications for things that wouldn't be approved by a variance, and a variance is an approval by the planning commission. So it seemed that, you know, you were giving an out in modifications to people who didn't get variances at a planning commission level. It seemed like it should be the other way around, but.
It's important to note, so variance is a term that's used rather often in this area. And according to state law, it's a very specific exception that you can apply for. There has to be a physical constraint on the land that requires you to ask for this variance. So we're trying to get back to variances are only for this purpose, and there's some other findings that you have to make as part of state law. And then taking things that might have been called variances in the past over to modifications and exceptions and trying to make that differential.
Hmm. That helps. Thank you.
Okay.
So nothing else.
Okay. Commissioner Jenkins, 3031.
No, nothing.
And I have nothing as well. So Commissioner Jenkins, 32 and 33.
Nothing.
Commissioner Fuller, 32, 33.
Nothing.
Commissioner Maynard, 32, 33. No. Commissioner Maynard, 34, 35.
No comments on 34 or 5.
Commissioner Fuller?
No comment.
Commissioner Jenkins?
I'm good.
So I have one thing to, excuse me, let me reread this one. Okay, I don't think that's worthy of a comment. So Commissioner Jenkins, we're back to you on 3637.
No. It's not worth it. No.
Okay. Commissioner Fuller?
I'm good.
Commissioner Maynard?
No comments on we're on 34, 35?
36, 37.
Okay. No comments on 36 or 7, though.
So this is the 10% deal on the variable modification? No.
That's so, in modifications.
Okay, so this is 10% on height. And I was having some trouble with that because, 10% on 20 foot is 2 foot.
Mm-hmm.
Is that overly restrictive? An existing structure. So,
Chair,
you know, you have an existing.
This is all coming from that Coastal Act. It's very detailed on these particular kinds of requirements that we added in the
suspected.
Public Resource Code in their regulation.
So it doesn't matter what I say.
We could change it, but when we get to the Coastal Commission, they're going to ask us to put it back.
Well, it is too restrictive now. But it doesn't matter. We can't. But all right, so we're at page 38 and 39. Commissioner Maynard, 38 and 39?
No comments on 38 or 39.
Commissioner Fuller?
I'm good.
Commissioner Jenkins?
Moving on.
Me as well. Commissioner Jenkins, 40, 41?
Yeah, I would like a definition for de minimis development on the top of 41.
For de minimis.
J. Oh, actually, that should be D. H-I. No, wait a minute. No, never mind. Oh, yeah. No, because it's, I see. I made the wrong note. So J is correct. I was suggesting it would be a subsection of 4, and therefore it would become D, but I guess it's the start of a new one, so it's J.
So we're good?
Just following that line. Yeah,
see.
Just the definition.
Wow. Commissioner 4, 40, 41?
Moving on.
Okay, Commissioner Maynard, 40 or 41?
Moving on.
Okay, Commissioner Fuller, back to you. We're going to shake up the order, 42 and 43.
Still moving.
Commissioner Jenkins?
I'm good.
Commissioner Maynard, anything on 42, 43?
I do have a comment on 43. 1758-080-C2, appeal rights. I'm curious if that is a Coastal Commission restriction and I guess we don't have to answer because we're not going back and forth, but I'd like that looked at a little bit more to see if that's a restriction from Coastal Commission or that's something we can still allow people to appeal the second time.
Okay. So, Commissioner Fuller, we're back to you on 44 and 45.
I'm good.
Commissioner Jenkins, anything else?
Nothing.
Commissioner Maynard, anything on 44 and 45?
That was fun. For B, 1758-120B, notice of final action. I know in one of the earlier public notice sections, we gave different options where somebody could choose an electronic notification rather than a print notification. So would it be possible that instead of submitting a self-addressed stamped envelope, you could opt in for an email option? Just a thought on 1758-120B.
I had the same comment. So that's my only comment. So Commissioner Maynard, why don't you look at 4647?
So on, yeah, I think I will be okay on 4647.
Okay, Commissioner Fuller?
Yeah, and I think this is just here where maybe a different definition of the purpose for the modifications rather than it is not possible or practical to approve a variance. It sounds sort of like, well, since you couldn't get it from a planning commission hearing, then we'll give it to you through an administrative. So some other way of wording that would be my suggestion.
Okay. Commissioner Jenkins, on these two pages?
Yeah, this is the modification section on 47. And we had a planner from Stantec mention about historically it was 20%. And so I'm just curious if this might be looked at. And also, just a question for staff, is there a modification hearing? Is there a formal hearing for the mod that the public is invited to that would come? Because in other jurisdictions, boy, they're tough to go through. You meet with a gatekeeper and they see if your staff support, and then it goes to the hearing officer. Mm-hmm. And it's an involved process. I like streamlining, but are we serving the public well by giving them the ability to have input on it? So
can we have a quick answer on that one?
Yeah, just real quickly. As written, there isn't a hearing required for the modification. However, if there's an application for another permit, and as part of that you're asking for the modification, it would be decided on. So say you're having a conditional use permit for some reason, and with that you're asking for a modification, the Planning Commission would weigh on that. But just if it's just a modification and that's the only kind of decision being made, it would not have a hearing.
Part of this, we did dial back the amount that you could get through a modification. Like, you know, current practice right now is 20%. It seemed a little excessive to buy a signature that would be okay. So we dialed it back significantly in this section. But we certainly could talk about if we go up, then maybe we do put the hearings back in or, there are other options.
It's a sliding scale, certainly.
Just sliding review. For further discussion, so say that we're in a modification scenario. I mean, we're saying there is then it's a variance if it goes beyond 10%? Or how
no.
would we deal with that?
You would, if we were to institute, like, let's say 10% by a mod by the zoning administrator or director, 20% with an AUP, or, I mean, there are ways to do that beyond the mod, but it, I mean, and right now, the way it's written, you would have to look for another method to get that modification starts getting confusing, because then you could apply for it through an AUP or you could apply to the commission for a CUP.
Okay.
But this is the very minimal where you could get a staff.
I get so saying sign off. So saying that out loud actually paints a clearer picture that the zoning administrator can do a modification that is within this 10% or less. Then the next step would take them to administrative
it would depend
permit
on the
or
type
conditional
of,
use permit
right.
or whatever it would be, which always involves hearing. So maybe this is okay. I was troubling to see the 10%, but now that you explain that, as long as there's a process, and I support the idea of having small modifications to be handled within this kind of a process, because it's not expensive, it's relatively quick, and it is not of a significant level that is likely to change anything that the public is going to get upset about. So.
And it would be appealable as well.
And it's still appealable?
Mm-hmm.
We got everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful. Okay, Commissioner Jenkins, we're on 48 and 49.
I don't have anything here.
Good. Commissioner Fuller?
I'm good.
Commissioner Maynard, 48 and 49?
I'm going to comment on 48 and disagree some with the comments that have been made. I guess I'm still a little bit unsure. I go back to Commissioner Fuller's comments that it sort of feels like you go to a modification if you can't get a variance. And I think a variance covers a lot of what's already needed. And so some general comments that I have is I found the required findings a bit vague. C 1759-040-C1, there's exceptional circumstances. What does that mean? C4, it can be demonstrated that the design of the proposed addition is superior. What does that mean? So I think a lot of these were a little bit vague for me, and I think that there should be a public hearing if there is a modification. So I'd like to see that written in. Even at the 10%, I think that that should be written in, especially since these aren't as clear as the variances, where there was sort of a very specific physical barrier, or there were sort of more clear guidelines. This is open enough that I think the public should be more involved with it. So those are some of my comments, and I think especially because our existing process would require a public hearing for this, we would actually be lightening that, and I think we should stick with what we've got there.
So just clarification, because I just heard him say we're still have public hearing for modifications. Am I incorrect?
We have hearings for modifications when there's a permit that's attached to it, like a conditional use permit, which is frequently the case.
Okay, so in a minor modification by the zoning administrator, there would not necessarily be any hearing attached to it.
Like, for example, if you wanted to put a fence in your front yard.
Right.
In the setback, you did, at your house, and you wanted to increase it by 10% of the allowed height. Let's say it's 4 feet, and you go 10% of that's very minimal amount. So we're trying to facilitate that.
Great example. So do we want that to go to a hearing process?
That's the
Don't
situation.
Don't we want to be able to have the modification, like something like that, doesn't get caught up in that?
Yeah, maybe if we can separate out the cases a little bit more. I think because it's so vague here, it's hard to really comment on that. Because I do agree, if it was just a simple fence, that's that, you know, then maybe a fence project, I'd be more open to administrative review. But this is this could catch so much more.
That's an administrative permit, or it's not even a permit,
and it's open to appeal
as long as it's within the parameters. So. We certainly want to be mindful of not creating that cumbersome nature of the process that we've been trying to address in this one.
And if I can help, so we hear you, and I think we thought we got this right. We put exclusions in here. Mm-hmm. We know how mods are used in practice. Mm-hmm. But maybe we can work with some of this on the exclusions and adding some clarity that can benefit this section. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe make people comfortable with that.
And we do have that currently in the code. We have a level that is sign off by the directors and administrator. Mm-hmm. We have a level that requires an administrative hearing. We have, you know, and for some of those decisions, we have the permits that come to the commission and then things that have to go to council. So I think what Ann or Ms. Wells, we can go back and take a look at how that would function and adding things in there. I think the use of the word modification, because we use that now in our current code, is a little misleading. And some of the codes has been waivers and exceptions. But I think in the long run, once we get there, we could, instead of, you know, once we start talking about it more, there's also options for notices of decision. It's also important to note that everything here is appealable. And so that would start the process, and then that would come to you on appeal. So
maybe as one other follow-up question, what would increase height but not require another type of permit? I guess I'm trying to think. I guess height would, I mean, fence height potentially, but you've got maximum height of buildings and structures. When would you have a building that would get a modification but not go to public review, not go to a public hearing?
Additions?
Yeah, like an addition I feel like should get
an accessory building.
Well, second stories, we're doing another thing, but...
And Or you may have where, you know, you're an addition and you're trying to honor some roof shape or form and accommodate that. And mm-hmm. there may be, you know, need 6 extra inches would help with something. You know, these end up being very small amounts mm-hmm. when you do the math on them. And again, they're to capture what you have now in some cases where there was either some gray areas before or where setbacks were based on a percentage of lot width. And now if you're identifying instead a mm-hmm. hard and fast line, well, if something's already built some way, this allows, without going through a complicated non-conforming section, mm-hmm. to you know, allow for that. Again, with if it's a 5-foot setback, that up to 10%, that's 6 inches mm-hmm. that we're talking about. These aren't mm-hmm. intended to be yeah. noticeable, yeah. impactful mm-hmm. changes. And that's why they're kind of down at this level. Whereas a variance, there mm-hmm. is no limit on that. There's just those findings that need to be made. And that's why they go to the Planning Commission, because mm-hmm. they... So, again, by limiting and specifying the specific standards that may be modified, that's the thinking behind then allowing it at an administrative level.
Okay. Mr. Chair, one last thing I yes. have for mods. I didn't see anything in here about notices to neighbors. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe we should look at that.
Yeah. Notification on mods?
Yeah.
Okay.
I apologize for the back and forth, but I guess given what was said, as long as it stays at 10%, I know there was conversations about increasing to 20%. If it stays at 10%, and I might say to take out the height of the buildings, one might go to a public hearing. So if you're talking about a height of a building, I think that should go to a public hearing. But if otherwise we're looking at under 10% or other, I would be okay with the administrative review, and I support the public notice comment.
Okay, and I'll just add that I support this modification concept. Obviously, we have some concerns from the commission, mm-hmm. But I certainly support mm-hmm. a modification procedure. Mm-hmm. And how we fine tune it, may be valuable, but we really need that in mm-hmm. the, to allow for those minor changes mm-hmm. to be done cost effectively and time effectively. Mm-hmm. So we're into now 50 and 51, mm-hmm. is that right? Or
yes.
did I skip anybody? No? Good. Commissioner Jenkins, you're up 50-51.
I'm good.
Commissioner Fuller, 50-51.
Good.
Commissioner Maynard, 50-51.
I am okay with 50-51.
I am as well. So Commissioner Maynard, we're going to 52 and 53.
I have no comments on 52.
Commissioner Fuller.
Good.
Commissioner Jenkins.
I'm good all the way to 55.
You're good all the way. So Commissioner Jenkins bit off 54 and 55. Commissioner Fuller, anything on?
Not I.
Commissioner Maynard?
I'm fine.
I just have a note in the margins about the findings and stuff for emergency permits, because we just had an interesting emergency permit with out there at Bacara Beach. And have you run this through that scenario to make sure it didn't create any undue pressure on an event like that?
I haven't run that particular case yet through the emergency permit. That was kind of on my list of things to do to see how it worked or didn't work.
Yeah, that's just an interesting case, yeah. and obviously needed to be dealt with. So that was my only note there. I don't want to go too far with that. All right, we're at 56 and 57. Commissioner Fuller, you're up.
I'm good.
Commissioner Jenkins?
Nothing.
Commissioner Maynard? 56 and 57.
I am okay with 56 and 57.
I am as well. So we're at 58 and 59. Commissioner Fuller?
Yeah, I had to, on 17.62.060 annual review. It was brought out by a comment letter. The applicant must initiate the required annual review by submitting a written request. So why is the applicant initiating the required annual review?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, requirement now.
Well, that he's supposed to initiate it.
You know, right.
Right. All right. So, and then on 59B, 17.62.08B. Future rules and regulations that do not conflict with those rules, regulations, and policies applicable to the property as set forth in the development agreement. So that's just really not clear, that whole thing in there. From applying new rules, regulations, and policies that do not conflict with those rules, regulations, and policies applicable to the property as set forth in the development agreement. So I'm not quite sure what is going on there.
Okay. Commissioner Jenkins, anything on that one?
No.
Commissioner Maynard, anything on 5859?
I believe we talked about earlier taking out land use permits and we're doing more building permits and AUPs. I'm just wondering if that's still the language we should be using.
Where is that?
It's in 1762-080B. A development agreement will not prevent the city from denying or conditionally approving any subsequent land use permit. Mm-hmm. But we don't have land use permits anymore.
Good catch.
Mm-hmm. Okay, gold star. So the my only comment is it looks like the annual review process is something new, or I don't know how we qualify, how we did that in our current ordinance, but I think that's a good process. I would agree with the comment that came from the public and some of the commission about mm-hmm. how is it initiated? Is it initiated mm-hmm. from the staff on the review or the other way around? I think that has to be given consideration. So we're on page 60 and 61, Commissioner Fuller.
Good.
Commissioner Jenkins.
Yeah, under initiation, under 1763-020A, initiation, mentions requests can be initiated by a member of the public or a motion of the city council. I'm just curious, should we have the planning commission listed in there as an option, mm-hmm. and how would that process? I mean, obviously we mm-hmm. could be qualified applicant, but so.
Okay. Anything on 61?
No.
Commissioner Maynard, anything on 60 or 61?
I'm good.
Okay, so what we're on zoning map amendments. I had a couple of comments. It's just we use this the language throughout these, amendments to the general plan, the zoning map, the amendment proposed appears to have no material effect on the community or the general plan. Yet, by the very fact that you're making amendments, they could have a material effect because sometimes an amendment to the general plan is of significance or a zoning map. So. Mm-hmm. That was just confusing, that reconciliation, i.e. our general plan still says we cannot convert any ag, right? We still have that. We haven't reconciled mm-hmm. that with a couple properties that are going to come through.
That's correct, and I think what you're referring to is the fact that your zoning has to be consistent with your general plan. So if there is a change that's triggered in your requested zoning amendment, then you would have to have a companion general plan amendment that's also initiated.
Right, and mm-hmm. we use this same language for general plan amendments, mm-hmm. which obviously, if there is some significant change, you have to change the general plan, and yes, it could have a significant change. So when we get there.
Right, so then when you take it, let's say there is a, well, let's say it's initiated for a zoning change and a general plan amendment. The final action from the city council would ultimately have to be taken first on the general plan, and then they could take action on your zoning change.
I get it. So the general plan has been changed significantly, but that is now the general plan.
Yeah, therefore, and that's state law. That's
coming
from state law. Yeah.
Got it. See, that's why I'm not in this business.
But I just also point out that these are factors that the city council considers in initiation, and it's or. They don't have to meet all of these. And one thing might be, you might have a cleanup general plan amendment. It's just a cleanup, and there really is no material difference. So the city council goes, sure, let's do it because there's no material difference and do it. So these are just the factors in consideration of whether to take on the initiation or not.
Thank you. So that was 60 and 61. Did anyone miss an opportunity to comment there? No. Commissioner Fuller, we're back to you on 62 and 63.
No comment.
Commissioner Jenkins, anything on 62, 63?
No.
Commissioner Maynard, 62, 63?
No.
Going once, twice. Whoa, sorry. I'm coming back. See, it wasn't gone yet.
Well, I think it was you who brought up initiation of amendments that, well, the Planning Commission can initiate an amendment? Maybe not.
An applicant can and the council can. I think that's it. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. We don't do it.
Yeah. We don't get to initiate them. We get to review the potential amendment. 64 and 65, Commissioner Fuller, did you have anything there?
No.
Commissioner Jenkins?
Nope.
Commissioner Maynard, 64, 65?
Yes, on 64, I'm going over the initiation factors. Oh, that's actually, which might be different. We do have the findings. Okay. I think one small edit on this. I think that one covers the goals with the general plan. The amendment proposed appears to be consistent with the guiding principles and goals of the general plan. It is, if there's a amendment, it will have a material effect on the general plan because we'll be changing the general plan. So in two, I would take out or the general plan. I think you accomplish that in number one. So that would be, because I think any amendment will have a material effect on the general plan. You can't do that. And then on 65, okay. I think that's, could be, yeah. I think also, I guess I like four on the initiation. Public facilities are available to serve the affected site. I wonder if that should also be in findings. So for an initiation, should that also be a requirement of the findings? That's all of the ones that I've got.
Okay, 64, 65, I think that finishes is up there. Commissioner Maynard, how about page 66 and 67?
No comments on 66 or 67.
Commissioner Fuller?
No comments.
Commissioner Jenkins?
Nothing.
Commissioner Jenkins, we're at 68, 69.
Nothing.
Nothing. Commissioner Fuller?
Nothing.
Commissioner Maynard?
Nothing.
All right, so 70, 71, Commissioner Maynard.
No comments on 70, 71.
Commissioner Fuller?
So just comment, I guess we have no specific plans for specific plans.
You are witty.
Thank you.
Good one, though. So anything else?
No.
Okay. Commissioner Jenkins?
Nothing.
Commissioner Maynard, did you have a shot at these two pages?
No comment.
Okay. So Commissioner Maynard, 72 and 73?
No comment.
Commissioner Fuller?
Nothing.
Commissioner Jenkins?
Nothing.
Commissioner on and nothing. Boom! Wow. Part five. Okay. So let's take a short break, and then we'll come back for staff to kind of lead us into part six, and we'll see if we can get through part six before it's time to quit tonight. So we're going to have 10 minutes. Yeah. 10 minutes, because we have to find a bathroom.
Just follow Lisa.
Go back to it. Let's call the meeting to order. And we're going to go right to staff to lead us into section six.
So just real quickly, part six is the general terms, and it has two chapters. The first is the use classifications, and this is what we've referred to periodically throughout the zoning ordinance, where the uses are defined. And we use this when we're in the use tables and the standards for specific uses. What exactly are we talking about when we refer to family daycare or any other type of use? So this is a section where that's defined, and it's grouped into seven use groups: residential uses, public and semi-public, commercial, industrial, transportation, communication, utilities, agricultural, and then accessory uses. The next chapter is the list of terms and definitions. So it's the definitions of the terms used in the zoning ordinance. As I mentioned earlier, we will be going back through and updating and refining to making sure the changes that we've made throughout the ordinance, and some instances where people pointed out that we needed a definition, those will be wrapped in. And then one of the public comments on the accessory uses and versus primary use and the percentage, we are looking at that and refining that as well. So I just wanted to point out that specific interest or instance where a specific comment was made. And that's all I have.
Okay. So, team, we're going to section 6, page 1. Everybody with me so far? Mm-hmm. Okay, we're not going to change our pattern now. Commissioner Maynard, you get to go first.
No comments on 6-1.
Anybody have a comment? Commissioner Fuller?
No comment.
Commissioner Jenkins?
No.
All right, so Commissioner Jenkins, we got 2 and 3. What
Nothing.
Do you have? Nothing. Nothing? Commissioner Fuller.
Okay, so 6-2. Large family daycare facilities, aren't those state mandated terms? So maybe we should reference the state terms because mm-hmm. things may change, you know, and this may be the way they are today, but tomorrow the state may go, it's 15 and 9 or something, you know, mm-hmm. so. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, anything else on those 2 pages, 2 and 3? Commissioner Maynard, anything for you?
Yes, on page 3, supportive housing, there's just a space missing after the section code and before of the government code. Mm. And then a more specific one, 1770-020, community assembly, specifically refers to banquet centers on page 3. We'll get to it in a minute, but also on page 8, which is coming up, there is a definition of a banquet and conference center. So I found that a little bit confusing that banquet centers are included in community assembly, but then separated as a different use as part of commercial entertainment and, entertainment and recreation on V8. So would a banquet center be commercial entertainment and recreation or community assembly?
Okay.
And to be, mm-hmm. you know.
I have one comment on 3 under community assembly. It calls out the exclusion does not include such as a daycare center in a community yeah. assembly. And that seems a little inconsistent with what is going on in some of the church-type community facilities. So we're going on to 4 and 5. Commissioner Fuller, how about you? 4 or 5?
No.
Commissioner Maynard?
I have on 5, I know we're redoing the sustainable living research site, but just as we're working on that edit, I think it was good to, where it says the site for research into opportunities for sustainable alternatives to conventional development undertaken by private organizations or individuals in partnership with educational institutions, I think is too restrictive. I'd say in partnership with accredited experts, including educational institutions, or something along those lines. But I know you are working on a rewrite of that.
Anything else on 4 and 5?
No.
Commissioner Jenkins?
No.
I have nothing on 4 or 5. Commissioner Jenkins, 6 and 7?
Nothing.
Commissioner Fuller on 6 and 7?
Nothing.
Commissioner Maynard?
No edits.
Okay, so I just have a question because we have... under this is automotive vehicle sales services, automotive vehicle sales and services. We have light trucks. We and then automotive vehicle service and repair. So we don't have. I guess we don't have a use for selling large trucks and buses. Maybe calling out, being more specific on large equipment under our automotive vehicle service and repair major. Because we have, there we don't define trucks, we just say trucks, whether it could be large trucks or buses. Those are my comments there. So page 8 and 9, Commissioner Fuller, anything there?
No.
Commissioner Maynard? Eight and 9.
Just a reminder of my comment from 3 about the banquet centers and clarifying that.
Okay. Anything else?
That is it.
Commissioner Jenkins, anything on 8 and 9?
No, except from last time I talked about under building materials and sales and service, you do have, it says, you know, you're excluding nurseries and garden centers, but we do have some big box that do include all of that. So I'm just curious, are we thinking globally on that? So that's all.
Good. And why don't you go ahead and take 10 and 11, Commissioner Jacobs?
Nothing on 10 and 11.
Commissioner Fuller?
Yeah, on 11, mobile facility and vendor, I just don't think we really have a place for push carts in our community. So I just want to see any reference to them eliminated.
Okay. Commissioner Maynard, anything?
I would recommend that if we want to think about push cart regulations, that we make it a separate definition rather than eliminate it from the definition. That would allow us to be able to talk about what restrictions might be appropriate. And I guess with lodging and visitor services, I know we've talked a little bit about things like Airbnbs and how do they fit into these descriptions may be helpful. And I thinking also just about the nursery and garden centers, going back to some of the comments earlier about the sort of mixing of building materials and garden centers, and that these can be more mixed. Let's thinking about what that looks like in terms of the definition there too. That's all my comments.
Okay. I have one comment on 11. Nurseries, garden centers, second to the last line, fertilizer and soil products are stored and sold in package form only. Mm. I think that probably is not how we want to restrict that, because there are bulk amendments
right.
mm-hmm. that quite often are yeah. used in, yeah. and they're stored in a bulk fashion and sold by the scoop.
Yeah. Can I make right. a general comment related to that, because that's inspired a thought in me too? If we do have a restriction like this, the question then for me comes, what's the definition of a nursery or garden center that doesn't have it in package form only? Like, is there another alternate definition that you then move to if you don't meet that requirement? It seems like the definitions aren't the place to put requirements if you're not giving an alternative of what the other definition would be.
Farm supply.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe that's, yeah.
Yeah.
So we're on page 12 and 13. Any comments from Commissioner Maynard, 12 and 13?
I do not have comments on 12 or 13.
Commissioner Fuller?
No comment.
Commissioner Jenkins?
No.
I have none. Commissioner Jenkins, 14, 15.
Nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing.
Commissioner Fuller?
Nothing.
Commissioner Maynard?
Well, no comments.
So I have underlined on page 15 under light fleet-based services, we have a vehicle gross rating vehicle capacity as a determiner of 10,000 pounds. You need to examine that capacity limit, unless there's some other regulation that comes with that, because that could actually exclude an ambulance. Mm. So depending on how it's equipped. Like an ambulance truck, mm-hmm. probably over that. Mm. All right. 16 or 17, Commissioner Jenkins, anything there?
No.
Commissioner Fuller?
No.
Commissioner Maynard?
For 16, animal raising, what if you're raising animals not on a farm? What does that become? That's all I've got. I guess it becomes animal keeping?
Yeah.
It might be good that when there's differentiations like that potentially there could be a please see definition of animal keeping as an alternative, so that folks can help find the right language there. But I guess I'm still not even sure if that's right, because what if you're raising animals, but it's not a farm, but it's not just a household pet?
Breeding.
What's in between?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Residential uses. All right. So we are now under lists of terms and definitions. Page 18, 19. Everybody with me? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We still continue to do the page turn through these?
Mm. Sure.
Anybody have anything here?
No.
Yes. Okay. Oh. And we're going to do it. So, Commissioner Fuller, how about you take 18, 19? Anything there?
Nothing all the way through.
Okay. I'll come back to you later. Commissioner Maynard.
I just have a general request for the list of terms that there be a page number where the definition of the term is under the list of terms.
Oh, so there was a reference back. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, ooh. So it could be more like an index. You see abutting or joining, and then there's the page where you can find the definition of abutting or joining.
Okay, Commissioner Jenkins.
On 18, Design Review Board, I would just suggest in parentheses DRB, similar to what you've done for CDP and all those good guys.
Anything else on 19?
Nope.
How about you take 2021?
Nothing.
2021, Commissioner Fuller, or was I supposed to skip you for a while?
For a while.
Okay. Commissioner Maynard? Okay. 22, Commissioner Maynard, anything there, or 23?
No comments on 22 or 23.
Is it your turn again?
Yeah, 23, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, go ahead.
No comment.
No comment. Commissioner Jenkins, anything on 22, 23?
No.
All right. Commissioner Jenkins, 24, 25?
No.
Commissioner Fuller?
No comment.
Commissioner Maynard?
No comment.
26, 27, Commissioner Maynard?
No comment.
Commissioner Fuller?
No comment.
Commissioner Jenkins?
Yes, I do.
Go ahead.
Carport on page 26. It says an accessible and usable covered space enclosed on not more than two sides. I'm really very familiar with many occasions where a carport is enclosed on three sides. You'll be in an apartment situation, and it's enclosed on three sides. So it's open across the back. So I'm suggesting you change it to not more than three sides. Mm. Because that's really a very common occurrence. And then perhaps say without a door or, without a vehicle door, something like that, open. But anyhow, I would allow for three sides. That's all I have on 26 and 27.
All right. So Commissioner Fuller, 26, 27?
I'm good.
Commissioner Maynard, 26, 27?
I'm good.
All right. Commissioner Maynard, 28, 29?
I am okay with those definitions.
Commissioner Fuller?
Me also.
Commissioner Jenkins?
Nothing.
Commissioner Jenkins, 30, 31.
Yes, on 30, no surprise. For floor area, I'd like to see floor area gross and then also floor area net. Mm. Definitions for both of those.
Okay. Commissioner Fuller, anything there? Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean. Did you have 31?
That's all I had. Okay. That's all I had.
Commissioner Fuller, anything?
No.
Commissioner Maynard?
No comments.
All right. Commissioner Maynard, 32, 33.
No comments.
Commissioner Fuller.
32, 33. Yeah, just the one. I think this may have come up before. Tree. And then it says to see the tree definition.
I'm sorry. Go ahead and say that again.
See tree definition. I like that. Yeah.
I tried to find the definition of tree. I couldn't find it.
So that's 32, 33. Did you have a shot at there?
I do have one thing on 33 under pervious. I'm wondering if you want to do pervious / permeable, because permeable is also a very common term when it deals with stormwater management.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Good. We are now on page 34 and 35.
Sorry, can I make one comment on 33 to go back for a second? I just know in the signs we used a different light rating than lumens, but in the definitions of floodlight here we use lumens. Do we want to be consistent about what type of light measurement we use? And I don't have a strong feeling about which it should be, but it just seems like we're switching between luminosity and lumens and foot candles. So should we choose one and go with it?
Okay. All right. So you're on 34 and 35, Commissioner Maynard. Anything there?
No comments on these
Commissioner
two.
Commissioner Jenkins.
I just like the diagram. It's a very helpful diagram.
Yeah. Yep. Commissioner Fuller, anything 34, 35?
I'm good.
So, Commissioner Fuller, 36, 37. Anything there?
That's me? No.
No. Commissioner Maynard, anything on 36, 37?
No comments on this.
Commissioner Jenkins, 36, 37. Commissioner Jenkins, how about 38, 39?
Nothing.
Commissioner Fuller?
I guess it was brought up about the bicycle parking and stay at site for 4 hours or longer. I'm not sure if that is important or not, but I'll just make note of that. That's it.
Okay, Commissioner Maynard?
I think that when we talked about long-term parking in one of the earlier sections, we defined a little bit what requirements might be for long-term bicycle parking. So maybe that should also be here. And maybe 4 hours could be extended to 6 or 8. I do like sticking with full-time equivalent as opposed to full-time employees, but I would support extending the number of hours.
Okay, so that's under long-term parking for bicycles?
Mm-hmm. That is correct.
So my only comment relates to that same issue, and because it relates back to being long-term parking have a 50% requirement of coverage, mm-hmm. that one I still have I still have heartburn with that.
I do too.
Because 4 hours and 50% of them long-term, just something has to balance there. So we're now on, that was 38, 39, am I right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're on 40, 41. Commissioner Fuller, how about you take 40, 44?
I'm good.
Commissioner Jenkins?
Just, there was comment from Cecilia Brown just about sign definitions, and I just want to be sure that the members of the DRB and the people who spent a lot of investment in signs make sure they're happy as well. So
we'll be coming back to that, just like that section of the code.
Commissioner Maynard, did you have anything on 4041 there?
I think I like the, so when we're talking about electronic copy, I think there's different types of electronic copy, and that sort of changeable LED sign, maybe having a different definition for that versus if you're just sort of flipping a one number. So maybe having some different clarity on the terms there.
So you want to go to 42 and 43, Commissioner Maynard, see if you have anything there?
I do not.
Commissioner Fuller?
No.
Commissioner Jenkins?
Nothing on 42 and 43.
So, Commissioner Jenkins, back to you, 44 and 45.
Yes, go ahead, 45. And I was really trying to figure out how to be discreet on this one. This is under specified sexual activities, and I believe there's a typo. In the second sentence, the word public is there, and I believe that the L should be removed. That's all I'm saying.
Nobody can say that he's not paying very close attention.
Well done.
I wanted to travel to the public region.
So, Commissioner Fuller.
Or maybe she's private. I don't know.
44 no. or 45. Commissioner Maynard, 44 or 45.
No comments.
Commissioner Maynard, 46, 47.
Actually, sorry, let me make one comment on the window signs for a second. It may be helpful to have a different definition of a permanent window sign versus a temporary window sign. I just think of, you know, your 8.5 by 11 flyer for an event becomes the same as a permanent sign in the window. And that just makes it hard to talk about the sort of different things that are appropriate there. So, it just seems odd to me that sort of your community flyer about the Girl Scout cook-off that's this weekend is going to be the same as a permanent sign, maybe having two different definitions there.
All right. So we get to 46 and 47, Commissioner Maynard.
No comments on those two.
Commissioner Fuller.
No comment.
Commissioner Jenkins.
I think here's where on page 46 we'd like to add the definition about substantial conformity, if that would be appropriate.
Yes, please.
Okay. So I have no comments on those pages. 48 and 49, Commissioner Jenkins, anything there?
Nothing.
Commissioner Fuller? 48 and 49?
No.
Commissioner Maynard?
No comments.
No. So we get ready. Okay. So Commissioner Maynard, page 50.
I do have a comment on page 50. I don't like cyclic definitions. So the zoning administrator is the zoning administrator. I think there was another place where we talk about the zoning administrator, where we define the zoning administrator as the director of planning and environmental services or such director's designee might be the appropriate definition here.
Okay. Commissioner Fuller?
I'm good.
Commissioner Jenkins?
Nothing.
And I'm passing on the last page. We're not going through those maps. We've dealt with these in the
open. But what about the logo?
We don't need to do that. I think that takes us through, right?
I'm just checking if anybody has any comments on the map itself.
Anybody have any comments on the map? We have a couple of maps in here.
The map is, we're aligning the map with the
I think it's
plan.
Colorful enough.
We're trying to use the same kind of color scheme so you can easily go between one and another, and your office and industrial district colors are that same purple gray coloring. So each category kind of has its own theme.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Specific plan is a little close to office and institutional.
Gotcha. Sometimes, depending on what printer we use, it comes out differently, okay. So we'll have to work with that. That's a good point.
It's a funny question, but so what do you do with somebody who's colorblind? Do we have versions of this that are more textural, or?
No, well, we would get an APN or an address, and then you just look it up so that you have clarity online, or you could just call the counter and they'll walk you through it.
Okay. Upon adoption, these layers will be in the city GIS system that's accessible to the public. Mm-hmm. Click on it. It all comes up with your zoning and your general plan designation.
Okay. Which I did recently, and it's great. It really, really is nice. I mean, you want site-specific, and it's very helpful. So I have no comments.
And then if we are going to move on, I just want to make sure we don't lose that last slide of next steps. Mm-hmm. Are we ready for that?
Mm-hmm. We're ready for that.
Okay. Well, first, congratulations. Hey. We did a page turn, and this is, what did I say? This is workshop number 7.
Mm-hmm. Feels like a lot more than that.
Yeah, well, we had a lot of other meetings in addition to the series of workshops and the open houses and the stakeholder meetings and the modules. So, but congratulations, job well done. And we met our schedule. And so, which is we set out to do. And I think people were questioning that the first night, and we did it. So, congratulations. And we already have, we're getting ready for your next special meeting, which is on April 25th. And we're going to bring outstanding items like community assembly, RV parking and loading, and signs, and some of these items that we had sort of tabled with some, you know, general direction. We're going to bring them back so that you can see where staff's headed, just to make sure that we're trying to get these things lined up with you as much as we can before we release a revised draft, which will also be released as an underlined strike through to facilitate the review. So that would be April 25th. We will review those outstanding items so that we can get to work and get that underlined strike through done. And then we will release that revised draft and then have 3-4 weeks for public review and then go into public hearing. So we have two hearings planned where you'll consider not just the underlined or the revised draft, but also the environmental impact report that we did. And so that packet will be fairly large because we have to repeal ordinances, and then you'll be making a recommendation to the city council on all of the actions that will be required. So we're going to release that packet early along with the draft, revised draft. But I just wanted to end with that. We will get back to you on the 25th and get your the last bit of direction, and then we will get cranking on that revised. And that's it.
Director's report?
Mr. Chair, I just have one quick question before we move on. So will there still be any other open houses or any other facilitating input? Where I'm heading with the question is, all the public comment is great, but I especially hunger for the input from planners and planners associations and people who deal with zoning ordinances on a daily basis. And so getting their input is always helpful. So hoping we're still have an open door to that before. Well,
and we have had numerous meetings, and we do have on the books more meetings. We're going to try to, after April 25th, we're going to try to avoid scheduling more meetings because we really need to focus on getting that revised draft released.
Understood.
and but we do have more stakeholder meetings, and then one that's much larger on Thursday. we'll continue, but after April 25th, we're going to try to pull it back in so that we can put all of our resources on responding to the comments we've received so far.
Would it be possible after the strike-through version was released to have maybe one more open house so that once everybody gets to read the strike-through version that they could maybe come and participate in an open house where they could engage you in conversation about the strike-through version?
Yeah, we'll talk about that. I think we're just really at this point, now that we've crossed this milestone, once we get to releasing the draft, then we'll reassess internally about the process, and then and even trying to make sure we're messaging it correctly. Once we get to hearings, it's a little bit different. It's more official. We have to make motions on changes, and we'll be having to record that. Mm-hmm. So it'll be a little bit different, but we've certainly not ruled out any more open houses. Mm-hmm. We're just getting to the next milestone at this point, but we will be doing major broadcasting to the public about the release of the revised draft and then any additional workshops that we might be having or open houses.
And we were very careful not to say this is the last one at our last meeting. So we have provided time and money in our budget in the event that we feel that that's appropriate, whether it's one or more, and we'll look at different locations as well.
And I guess my last question is, so if there's two public hearings, and I'm just thinking about the number of edits we talked about here, and some are more controversial and some are not, should we do any type of process where, we as planning commissioners identify how many concerns we might have with the new version that we could reevaluate if we need two or more?
I think that's a discussion we'll have with the chair we get closer to the public hearing. I don't know if you need to follow him. And that's something, as we get closer, I think we'll have a better grasp on the easiest way to bring it to the commission, whether it's in, we could do it by sections or chapters, or there's different ways to run that through the public hearing process. Okay. And just because we have two scheduled, we're encouraging two, but with the recognition that sometimes there are more.
Okay. So. And one last reminder that I will be gone on June 27th.
And we have noted that, so thank you. So I guess I'll jump to the director's report unless there are any more questions.
Go right ahead.
Okay. So I just wanted to give a quick update on the Verizon application at Evergreen Terrace. Mm-hmm. A number of you, I believe, have heard the latest, and we got word out to the community and the affected applicant or the neighbors that have had a lot of concerns about it. Verizon has not pursued approval based on the shot clock, and that provision is no longer available to them. They now have more time to present additional information that has been requested by the city. The project will not be scheduled for the Planning Commission to consider until the information is received. The city remains committed to process and decide the application in a reasonable time frame and will meet that legal obligation. And when the item is rescheduled for the commission, additional notice will go out to the neighbors and all concerned parties.
All right, we'll move on to item D, Planning Commission comments. Any comments from my fellow planning commissioners?
Just a tremendous thank you to staff for the amazing amount of work that went into this, and you congratulated us for finishing this, but I must congratulate you for doing the yeoman's work in this one.
You're here. Commissioner Fuller?
I'm good.
All right. I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
I will second the motion.
All right. We're adjourned. I figure there's not going to be an opposition.